supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Every season, but that nobody ever really talks about. Is it safe to eat fruits and greens and other things that come out of your garden looking less than perfect if an insect or something may have nibbled a little bit or it's got a little blemish on it? We will attack that issue head on in the question of the week. Mostly, though, it's a phone call show, cats and kittens, and you know what that means. We're going to take that heaping helping at 1-888-346-9499. Kaylin, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. I've got a cantaloupe and a pumpkin that are growing.
Right.
And the thing is, I know that if you just leave them on the ground or on the grass, that part will rot. And I'm wondering, what can you put underneath them to help prevent that?
Now, where is Kaylin?
I'm in Oklahoma City.
Oh, wow. I don't want to put this the wrong way, but how come your garden's not dead?
Very diligent watering.
Oh, you poor guys. I mean, my heart goes out to you. I've been getting heartbreaking emails from gardeners in Oklahoma City in the Norman area. I mean, they're just burning up.
It's insane.
And obviously you are diligent about watering, and you're obviously using a good mulch to keep the moisture in the soil. Now, cantaloupe and pumpkin. The pumpkin, you now realize, is the monster plant of all time. It's the 600-pound gorilla of the garden. It's growing all over the place, right?
Yes, it's gone insane.
So where is the cantaloupe growing? Where is the fruit resting, on bare soil or on a lawn?
On the lawn.
Okay, so it has escaped its boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
And the pumpkin is definitely on the lawn.
Yes.
What are they growing out of?
I dug a hole and filled up the hole with a really good topsoil that we bought from the nursery, and it's been doing great.
Okay, and have you fed them anything yet?
I give them Miracle-Gro once in a while.
Okay, stop doing that. That's going to hurt you in the long run, especially with the heat that you're enduring. Okay. Get rid of that and go buy a nice organic fertilizer, a nice seaweed fish emulsion. That'll help your plants survive this heat.
Okay.
You would be surprised, first of all, at the fruit's ability to not rot on the ground. And I'll remind you, your ground is not moist. We're not talking Seattle here. We're talking a place during a dry heat wave. So I think your fear might be groundless. Now, I will tell you, when I had some beautiful pumpkins and the season was kind of rainy, what I did is I would get single pieces of board, not plywood, but real wooden boards. Or in our house, we had some slate left over from when a slate roof was removed. And working with a partner, the partner would lift up the fruit, and then I would slide this solid material underneath, and we would lay the fruit gently back down. Are you watering in a way that is covering the fruit and making the fruit wet where it hits the ground?
No, I'm paying attention more towards the soil,
and
the roots of the pumpkin have gone down, that they're holding up great.
Okay. First, I don't think you have to do anything. If you had talked to me beforehand, I would have tried to talk you into trellising the cantaloupe. These medium-sized fruits can be supported on a trellis. You know, get an old pair of pantyhose or some old sheets and rip them up, and you make slings for them, and it looks real cool. But the pumpkin, obviously, is probably going to be pretty big. What kind of pumpkin?
For the jack-o'-lanterns,
Well, no, there's no normal pumpkins. There's a huge diversity, but jack-o'-lantern pumpkins are a nice size. The vines are awesomely big, but the pumpkins are a good manageable size. My first advice, if you're not wetting the soil where they are and with what they're going through with your heat wave, I think you're perfectly safe in doing nothing. If you are concerned about it, a nice, solid object. Not cardboard, which would get wet and hold the moisture. Not plywood, but a nice old board or a piece of slate. Think something like that. And I want to be clear that the only reason I'm saying you don't have to do anything is because of the dryness of your soil. I mean, it must be like a dust bowl blowing around down there now.
Yeah.
you don't have moisture being trapped underneath. So I think you're okay. But if you want to, you know, you want to be safe, a nice solid object underneath. But be careful. Don't do it yourself. Make sure you have somebody to lift, and then you slide that underneath gently. Don't do any damage.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
All right, Caitlin, and I wish rain for you.
Thank you.
Take care. 1-888-346-9499. Charlie, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for having me on.
Where are you, man?
Hey, I'm in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. Beautiful Cherry Hill.
In the Garden State.
You bet.
So you must be calling with gardening tips to share with our listeners.
Yeah, we obviously don't know one another.
All right. What can we do for Charlie?
Hey, Mike. Well, we had a pool put in the spring, and we're really enjoying it right now. But it took a little longer than they expected. What I basically have is a really beautiful pool in a desert moonscape in my backyard. And I spoke to my lawn guy, and he said, we can plant grass, and we can put seed down and accelerant, and you follow my instructions, and you'll water, and 2 weeks you'll have grass. Am I crazy? Should I wait till spring?
The landscaper is wrong. And you're wrong.
Okay.
So that's two wrong, none right. We go into the double round. The best time, you're in Jersey, and you're going to plant a new lawn from seed. Okay, you only need to hang on a little bit longer, pal. Springtime is not the time to plant seed.
Right.
Your lawn would have been a disaster if you had gotten it in the spring, especially with the hot summer weather we've been having. Now, I have no idea what this crazed nut is talking about with an accelerant. That's the only time I hear that term used is during arson investigations. You know, the truth is that if the ground is prepared well, you know, mix some organic matter in now so you have the lawn of your dreams instead of a lawn on hard packed clay that will never be happy with you. Now is the time to till up that soil. Mix in lots of organic compost. I know Cherry Hill has great municipal composting sites. You should be able to get lots and lots of compost delivered. And then what kills me is he talked about 2 weeks. At this time of year, with the soil so warm, if it took more than 5 days, something would be wrong. But if you were to sow this seed in the middle of summer, all of the seed that you would use for your lawn in New Jersey would be what's called a cool season grass, bluegrass, fescue, rye. They would burn up like immediately after emerging. So we wait until we get to the point where the soil is still nice and warm, but the days have gotten significantly shorter. Most of the bad heat waves are over. And the magic window, as our lawn care expert Nick Christians from Iowa State University likes to say, the magic window for you is August 15th to September 15th. Grass that is sown into a healthy seed bed at that time of year, it is really your game to lose after that. You want to mix a lot of organic matter into the soil in the form of compost. You want to make sure that the surface is perfectly leveled. After that, that is the step that many people miss, because in the future, to have a beautiful lawn with few to no chemical inputs, you need to give it a cutting at the correct height of 3 to 3.5 inches. You can't do that if you got hills and valleys.
Right.
So that's why it's crucially important to level the lawn. By mixing all that organic matter into the soil, you won't need any fertilizer this fall. Do not let them apply, quote, starter fertilizer. That stuff is a fraud. It just burns up some of the grass seed. What you want to do is till all that organic matter in, get it nice and loose, get it level, and then just spread the seed and then cover it with a little more compost, or literally just walk around with a rake and gently rake the compost until you can't see most of the seed anymore. Then you water it in the morning and in the evening for about 5 days. After that, you should see a lot of green coming up. When you do, stop the evening watering and never water in the evening again. Continue the morning waterings until everything is up and well established. And then as we progress into the season, if we get rain, obviously you can back off to stop. If we don't get rain, you know, use your good judgment, start backing off to every other morning and then every third morning. But once we get into September and the weather really cools down, this lawn is going to have a great time. And one of the benefits of this timing is you should have a really well-established lawn that perhaps you will even have cut once or twice by the time leaves fall on it. So I want you to go out, if you don't have one, and buy a leaf blower that has a reverse setting.
Okay.
This first fall, I want you not to rake the lawn.
Okay.
Because it's still going to be a little tender. The winter is going to settle it in. So just go over the lawn, suck up the leaves with your leaf blower set on reverse. They go into a shoulder bag, and then use that to make compost. Use it to mulch your other landscape plants. Okay. It's million-dollar material. And then in the spring, make sure you're prepared to give it a good feeding with corn gluten meal to prevent any crabgrass seeds from germinating. And then just cut it at 3 inches, water it once a week deeply. Do not let anybody feed it again until the fall, and you will have a fabulous looking lawn.
Mike, I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, Charlie. Good luck, sir.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind all of our overplanted listeners that food banks around the country would love to receive donations of your extra homegrown goodies to help feed the hungry. You can find the food banks nearest you by visiting the Feeding America website. But don't you go counting up your cucumber contribution just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls and exactly what is safe and unsafe to eat when it comes to produce that's been damaged by insects. I'm insect-damaged Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
You're listening to WHYY-FM.
The Philadelphia Folk Festival proudly supports WHYY. This year's 50th birthday festival brings Levon Helm, David Bromberg, Arlo Guthrie, Tom Rush, Tempest, and more to the Old Pool Farm in Upper Salford for the weekend of August 19th through the 21st for concerts, crafts, camping, and children's activities. The Philadelphia Folk Festival's 50th birthday celebration. Details at 1-800-556-FOLK or folkfest.org.
The Chester County Hospital supports WHYY. As the only accredited chest pain center in Chester County, they are committed to providing immediate comprehensive care for cardiac patients and to making lives better every day. Details at chestercountyhospital.org.
The WHYY forecast, mostly sunny and hot today with a high around 93 degrees this afternoon. Tonight, mostly clear with a low near 72. Tomorrow, sunny with a high around 92 degrees, and Monday, partly sunny with a chance of showers and thunderstorms, high around 91. It's 85 degrees in Pottstown and 86 degrees in Center City, Philadelphia at 11:19. You're listening to WHYY-FM.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, a topic you don't hear spoken about very often amongst us garden communicators. What can you eat and what shouldn't you eat when there's been a little bit of insect, bug, slug, or maybe even bird damage to your produce? Nobody gets away. Everybody has stuff that gets damaged. Should it all be tossed? Can some of it be saved? We'll discuss this interesting issue when we get to the question of the week. In the meantime, though, lots more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Susan, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you doing today?
I am doing just fine, Sue. How are you?
I'm just doing fine, too, and I'm calling from Ewing Township, New Jersey.
Excellent. Thank you so much. What can we do for you?
Well, I have a couple of poison ivy issues. We just moved into a new home.
Right.
And I have several small-ish poison ivy plants in my backyard. I know all about the plastic bag dance,
right,
but I've been trying to work up my courage to do it because I've been hearing horror stories about people who have gotten it horribly and have had to be hospitalized. And
now, those people, none of them knew they were being exposed to poison ivy.
Okay.
I've read the medical literature. These were people who went rolling around on a forest floor without recognizing plants, or in some cases, not realizing the plant would still be toxic in the middle of winter,
right,
used the plant as kindling for a fire and inhaled the smoke. And it can cause the only medical emergency in dermatology. But if you know what you're doing and you know what the plants are and you're protected, it's remarkably safe. Now, just for those who don't know what we're talking about, the quote, plastic bag dances, don't pull poison ivy with gloves and don't try to kill it with herbicides because the dead plant will still give you a rash.
Right.
Just collect all these big, thick plastic bags from the mall stores that are filling up one closet you have.
I feel like it's kind of hard to grab the plants through those bags, though.
Well, you have a helper, and the helper has a garden hose with cold water coming out,
mm-hmm.
and the helper will first soak the soil,
right.
and then you'll put the bags over each hand, and then slowly pull at the base. If you're afraid you're not getting the plant, wrap it around one hand, because the bag is on the outside. The secret is to not pull like a guy.
You can't,
or you'll snap it off. Pull slowly, and you'll be amazed sometimes at the root system that comes up. And then just slide that bag into the other bag, put those in a trash can, and move on.
Move on with new bags.
Never reuse the bags.
Basically, I need your reassurance about it.
If you are phobic about this, after every pulling session, you have your partner wet down your hands and arms.
Okay.
Urosol oil dissolves completely in cool water. You have 15 to 20 minutes from the time it touches you to get rid of it and suffer no damage whatsoever.
Okay, so basically a cold shower afterward will work too, right?
Yes. Really, rinse yourself off well outside. But if these are small plants, you're not going to make contact at all. But just to make yourself feel better, you just wash down your hands and arms outside.
Okay.
And if you want the extra protection, there's a product called Ivy Block that you can smear all over your hands and arms, and that'll make an impenetrable layer. So please be assured that not only have I done this every year for like the past 25 years since I kind of accidentally discovered this technique, we have literally gotten hundreds, maybe thousands of emails and phone calls from people who did it, who had like huge infestations, and they thought this was the dumbest thing in the world, but they realized what I said about the herbicide was true, so they did it. And we have gotten so many people get back to us and say it's miraculous, and we never got one single person said, I did it the way you said, and I picked up poison ivy.
Okay, well, that's definitely what I wanted to hear. The second poison ivy problem I have is my neighbor's big, beautiful maple tree is absolutely infested with it.
And does it hang onto your property?
Maybe 15 feet from my house.
And have you talked to them? Do they know about this?
Well, that's the problem. He doesn't seem very approachable.
Okay.
I was looking out my window the other day, just examining the tree.
Right.
And all of a sudden, he appeared in the backyard with his hands on his hips, glaring at me. And I kind of looked at him puzzled, and he just turned around and stomped off in a huff.
Huh.
So I don't know how to even approach this person now.
But the tree is on his property.
Yes.
And it has a vine growing up the side that has reached the canopy and is now dropping back down.
Yes.
What's on your property there?
Right on the edge of our property, it's a bed of ivy. The tree is also covered in English ivy.
You know, the only one who's not going to win there is the tree.
Okay.
If there's English ivy and poison ivy climbing up into this tree, the tree may die and become less of an issue. But my advice to you, first of all, you can't touch anything that's on his property.
Right.
So make sure you really do understand where the property line is.
Okay.
And then I would just install a line of ornamental grasses there. You know, pick Charlie Weaver to block. You put in a couple of big plants that are going to kind of push it back and that the ivy won't really get attached to. It'll okay. look great. It'll keep the stuff on his side, and you won't have to look at his huffs.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your help, Mike.
My pleasure, Sue. Be
All
brave.
Right, have a great day.
Be brave.
I'll try. Bye-bye now.
Take care. 1-888-346-9499. Dalton, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for answering my call.
Well, thank you for making that call, Dalton. Where are you, sir?
I'm in Claymont, Delaware.
Excellent, excellent. What can we do for Dalton in Delaware?
Well, I have a 34-year-old crabapple tree that a young man ran off the road and ran into it and damaged the bark at the bottom. Thank God he wasn't hurt. But about one-third of the bark at the bottom of the crabapple tree is loose, and it's about 2 foot in diameter and about 4 foot two in circumference. And about one-third of that bark is completely loose. It's just hanging there.
Right.
It's not attached to the tree anymore.
The fact that you know the exact age of this tree, did you plant it?
Yes, sir, I did.
Oh, you poor thing. You know, one of the issues we have here is you have a crabapple tree, and by the time we get into the midsummer, they tend not to look good to begin with. They're at their best in the early spring when they put on that amazing show of flowers. So I'm not even going to ask you what the tree looks like, because nobody would recommend staring at a crabapple tree in a hot summertime. Now, you say he hit it on one side. Does that mean that one side of the bark is pretty chewed up, but the
yes.
other side of the tree is intact?
Yeah, I'd say almost two-thirds of the other side of the tree is intact.
Excellent.
Two-thirds of the tree completely is intact, and about one-third, maybe a little more, is broken loose.
So we're talking...
It's just hanging there, you know?
Oh, I know.
Bark.
And it's driving bark. You crazy.
Well, I just wanted to know, I figured you were the best man to ask, what would be, if there was anything I could do to help it to survive.
Typically, not doing anything is the best
okay.
thing you can do. Now, again, obviously, it'd be hard to tell if a crabapple tree was in distress this time of year, so we're not going to know the impact of this until spring. But I have to tell you, I am in the 80 to 90% certainty in my head that your tree is going to be fine. Now, the bark won't look especially nice in that area. It's going to be many years before the tree can kind of regrow. And you're always going to be able to see it was hit, probably, at least for the next 5 years or so. But as long as there is a portion of the outer bark, a significant portion, that is in contact with the root system and that goes up to the canopy, there's no reason to believe that the tree will be significantly impacted. Now, it's probably unhappy. It's probably a little stressed. It's probably trying to call a lawyer.
That's good news. I'll tell you, that's good news, because I love the tree. It's so beautiful, like you said, in the spring. And in the winter, it has those little tiny red crabapples all over it. And, the neighbors have all even commented, that's really pretty in the winter, you know. And then around February, the birds, the starlings and different birds get up there and eat them.
Now, typically in a situation like this, people will tell you to paint the tree with white latex or to go out, and you can actually buy sealing materials and stuff like that. And I'm so glad you called first. Because anything that a human does right now will negatively impact the ability of the tree to fix itself. Do you have any mulch? Have you fed it any chemicals?
I haven't fed it anything since I planted it. I've never had to feed it anything. I watered it, of course, I guess 30 some years ago when it was a young tree, but
good. And
I've never done anything to it.
Okay, good. So you have not provided any extra stress. Here's the only thing I want you to do. Mm. I want you to get a hose out there, and I want you to take the nozzle off the hose and
okay.
just fiddle with the controls until you get a good steady but slow drip coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And I want you to let it drip at the base of the tree once a week for like 12 hours.
Great.
Really saturate the soil. So just to make sure, once a week we give the tree a good watering and that it doesn't suffer the further stress that all trees are suffering right now of this horrific summer weather that a lot of the country is going through. But otherwise, you're in good shape because you did nothing and because the other side of the tree is fine. It should leaf out perfectly. You should get a good show of flowers. Just keep it hydrated until the temperature breaks and we get rain again.
I talked to my neighbor, and he said, call Mike McGrath and find out what you're supposed to do, and don't do nothing to it until you find out. And that's what I did, and I'm glad.
Well, that's great to hear. Thank you very much. Thank your neighbor for me. And when you're not sure what to do, doing nothing is always the right choice, Dalton.
Great advice.
All right, good luck, man.
Thank you, sir. Take care.
You too. 1-888-346-9499. Lisa, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I am doing well today. Lise, how are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
And where is Lise doing well?
In Bethlehem, Pennsylvania.
Ah, I know where that is. What can we do for Lisa in Bethlehem?
Well, my wife and I planted a raised bed garden probably at the beginning of June. The garden is about 8x4, I would say, and about 10 to 12 inches deep. And we planted zucchini, Black Beauty, in there, along with several other different vegetables and herbs. I would say probably at the beginning of maybe the second week in July, my wife noticed a couple of white spots, like fuzzy white spots, on one of the leaves before we left for vacation. Then we left on vacation for a week, and we had a house sitter who was watering our garden. He watered every day, and we got back, those white spots were all over our leaves and all over the zucchini leaves and on the stems as well, but not on the fruit.
You tend not to see these mildews on the fruit itself. You should never water every day. Do you not have any mulch on the garden to retain moisture?
We do have mulch. It had been so hot. Instead of telling him, like, if you see this, then water. If you don't see that, we just say, go ahead and water every day.
If you're uncertain what to do, what you do is you take your hand, you find a patch of dirt that's nice and loose, and you wiggle your finger down. You don't water if you can find water before you hit your knuckle, because that's where the root system of the plants are. And what you're doing so far is you are overwatering them. They're saturated. They're getting disease. What kind of mulch is on the surface of the soil?
Pine mulch.
Got to get rid of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's wrong with pine mulch?
Wood mulches are what researchers would use to breed plant diseases in the lab.
Oh, great.
They're only so popular, they're only so marketed because a wood waste can no longer be landfilled. So it's all been pawned off on gardeners. Get rid of the wood mulch. Do you have any compost? Do you have any access to compost?
Yeah, we have our own compost, but also Bethlehem has free compost as well. We laid down a layer of compost, then topsoil, then mixed those together, planted, and then mulched on top.
Okay, well, you did everything right except the mulching.
Okay.
You can mulch with more compost. In university studies, 2 inches of compost equaled or beat out any other mulch.
Okay.
Now, when you are watering, are you wetting the leaves of your plants?
We were trying to aim just for the roots.
But you're standing up with a hose.
We don't have a hose. We're using kind of like it's like a pump and a hose. So we're pumping ourselves and then leaning the hose down. It's a pretty small spout. You know, when they spray like chemicals, like pesticides?
Right.
They put them in a water tank, and you push it up and down to create pressure to have the chemicals sprayed out.
Right.
We don't have a hose. We don't have access to outside hookups, so we use that, and we're spraying water with it.
And did you buy it new, and it has not had any chemicals in it?
Yep, we bought it brand new.
Good.
And only use it for water. We're not using any chemicals on our garden.
You're going to have to figure out a way where you can deliver the water down at the root zone and not wet the leaves anymore. Especially zucchini. And then finally, when are you watering? What time of day?
Probably between like 2 and 4 o'clock. That's when we come home to let the dog out.
Okay. Well, you need to do your watering in the morning. So that everything gets to dry off. Replace the pine mulch with compost. Now, you're going to have to pull off the affected leaves. You'll get new leaf growth. You will be amazed. Go out there with a damp cloth. You can wipe the mildew right off the stem of the plant.
Oh, wow.
It'll just wipe right off. It won't go off the leaves, and those leaves are probably not photosynthesizing very well anymore.
So, right, they're turning yellow.
So first get rid of the mulch, then pull off all the affected leaves and trash them, then cover the soil with compost, and then figure out a way where you can deliver a good, deep soaking to the root zone of the plant no more than twice a week. I realize you're working inside of restrictions, but daily watering weakens plants and keeps their root system shallow. They really need to get really saturated and then to go some time without. But I guarantee you're probably going to get perked up plants by the end of the season, and next year you'll know not to do any of these things again.
All right, that sounds great. Thanks so much for your help. Really appreciate it.
Good luck, Lise.
All right. Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind everyone with a cool season lawn, or rather the hope of achieving one, that the time to seed that lawn successfully is fast approaching. So if bluegrass, rye, or fescue you wish to establish, get tilling now. Line up that big compost delivery and start selecting your seed, because mid-August to mid-September is the perfect time to start such a sod. But don't go fooling with no fescue just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fascinating phone calls and what to do with slightly insect-damaged produce from your garden. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
You're listening to WHYY-FM.
Mike McGrath, right back at you with local events. The Rutgers Earth Center will host their annual Garden Field Day and Open House on Saturday, August 20th from 1 to 5, with a rain date of Sunday, August 21st, at the Earth Center at Davidson's Mill Pond Park in South Brunswick, New Jersey. This year's event will feature a harvest contest. Gardeners are invited to bring their biggest fruits and vegetables for judging in the Greatest of the Garden competition. And the wonderful anti-hunger group Philabundance is accepting donations of your fresh garden produce to help feed the area's hungry. You can drop your extras off Saturdays from 10 a.m. to noon at any of 11 different area locations. We'll post all the details at the events section of our website, youbetyourgarden.org.
Do you know a teenager interested in journalism and video production? WHYY is offering hands-on experience this summer with a Young Journalist Summer Camp for teen reporters. For more information, call 215-351-3318 or visit whyy.org/HamiltonCommons. The WHYY forecast, mostly sunny and hot today with a high around 93 degrees. Tonight, mostly clear with a low near 72, and tomorrow, sunny with a high near 92 degrees. It's 83 degrees in Manahawkin and 86 degrees in Center City, Philadelphia at 11:39.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll get to the question of the week. Is insect-damaged produce safe to eat? What should you keep? What should you avoid? How do you handle this very common occurrence that is not spoken about much? We'll speak about it and tell you what we think is safe for you to do when we get to the question of the week, right after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls. At 1-888-346-9499. Valeria, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Valeria. Where are you?
I'm in New Bern, North Carolina.
Excellent, excellent. All right, what can we do for Valeria?
Well, you had a segment on July 9th when a woman called in and said she wanted to get rid of a snake.
Right.
And if I remember correctly, you said that women don't like snakes, and I wanted to say not all women feel that way about snakes.
So I presume I'm talking to a snake-loving woman.
Well, as long as they continue to stay in the yard and do their job, then yes. I'm not one of those people who wants to put them in an aquarium and have them slithering around in my house.
Oh, no, and I have to agree with you there. I've never really understood that. I don't think, you know, I don't think the snake has a great time either. But outdoors, as we said to her, they are tremendous pest controllers. Little snakes eat bugs and snails that are close to the ground. And then the bigger a snake gets, and I guess to some people the more frightening it looks, now we're talking the rat patrol and getting rid of mice and voles and real serious vermin. And I presume that's why you're happy to coexist?
Well, yes, and currently I'm not coexisting. The we have had two snakes in recent memory who took up here, and they had to have a reason for being here or they wouldn't have been here, so we were happy to have them. My husband is the person who was phobic about snakes, but he made peace with Herman. He said, Herman, if you stay out there, don't come any closer than the walk where I can see you. And, you know, we're cool, but if you come up on the porch, we've got a problem. And so Herman never came any closer to the porch than just the front walk, and he was doing his rat patrol thing when we hired a man to come in and clean out the shrubbery and put down mulch for the winter. And he encountered Herman, and he murdered Herman.
Oh!
He then told my husband that he had killed a snake very proudly, and my husband said, oh, my gosh, I'll try not to let my wife find out you did that, but I suggest you not be here when she gets home because she's not going to be happy. The gardener person could not understand why anybody would want a snake. Now, it was a black snake. It wasn't a copperhead. We live in the part of the country where copperheads will gather in fallen trees and things like that.
Right.
They're like the outlaws of the snake world because they can pose a danger to children and pets and, you know, people who inadvertently lift a log and find them. Black snakes are perfectly harmless.
I want to avenge Herman. Can we prosecute? I mean, this is, you're absolutely right, because the term black snake is, I believe, the same snake that's also called the rat snake in certain parts of the country. My friend Jeff Cox, who worked with me at Organic Gardening magazine, moved out to the West Coast, where he became a wine and food writer and still writes about gardening and stuff. But out in the West Coast, he began to experience gophers, which we don't have on the East Coast, but which are just devastating to gardens. And he learned a trick from his new West Coast friends to always drive around with a big burlap sack and a snake git in your trunk. And you would find these big black rat snakes sunning themselves sometimes on roadways and rocks. And they taught him how to approach the snake, how to get it into the bag. He's one of the gentlest people I knew, but he said he got the greatest satisfaction the first time he was able to empty a burlap sack down into a gopher burrow, and the snake went right into the burrow. And I can just see him doing the satisfaction dance, wondering what was going on downstairs.
Well, I guess the snake forgave him for the kidnap once he had encountered the gophers. So.
Knowing Jeff, he would be explaining to the snake that he was taking him out to dinner. All right, Valeria, pleasure to speak with you. Thanks very much for talking
You're
with
welcome.
Us. You're welcome. You take care. Thank you very much.
You too. Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Steve, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing good, Steve. How are you today, sir?
Oh, hanging in there, you know.
Where is Steve, either home or at work?
I'm at work in beautiful downtown Parsippany, New Jersey.
Okay, and you live in the area?
I live one town over in Denville, New Jersey.
All right, very good. And what can we do for Steve?
Well, we have four very large Great Danes.
Uh-huh.
And a nice piece of property with a decent-sized lawn that the puppies dogs use as their toilet, for want of a better term. Option does not exist for them to use another facility. I work long hours. My wife is blind and can't walk them, so forth and so on. Three of the dogs are females. I understand that there is something in the dogs, female dogs.
There are so many old wives' tales and fallacies about this. But one thing's for sure, you got four big dogs, Steve.
Oh, yeah. And the lawn is liberally spotted with what I call the dead grass zones.
Right.
That generally correspond to the particular area of the lawn that one each one has kind of like their own preferred area to do.
Right, because whatever. They've been marking their territory every time they go out. So that's both part of the problem and part of the solution. So, Steve, I'm sorry to tell you, you are not unique in any way. This is a very common problem. We hear about it all the time. You have four really big dogs. It sounds like you haven't done anything crazy because there's a lot of misinformation about there. People change the diet of the dogs. They do all sorts of crazy things. And this is a very direct relationship. The high nitrogen of the urine, which in a less concentrated form would actually mimic lawn food, is too concentrated going on to the same spot and burning the grass. There are many things you can do. The first advice we give people is to try and retrain the dogs. In other words, for you to spend some time with the dogs when you see they give you the indication that they want to go out or they're going to do something, take them to an out-of-the-way place in the back of the property and then instantly reward them when they go back there. Give them a treat, praise them. As you know, if you've been around these dogs a long time, they're desperate to please us. We often make the mistake as humans of not giving them clear enough instructions.
We got to kind of figure out option two, because remember, my wife is blind.
Oh, yeah, yeah, but I'm saying...
She can't do that.
No, but you can.
And, well, I'm not home.
Yeah, but you do go home occasionally, right?
Sure, sure.
You know, if they're good dogs, if you have a good relationship with them, if the hierarchy is well established, this is a couple of weekends. The other thing is kind of counterintuitive. A lot of people withhold water from the dogs, thinking that that will solve the problem. That makes the urine much more concentrated and much more destructive. So oddly enough, really hydrating the dogs, giving them as much water as they want, makes each individual action less damaging to the lawn. Now, finally, because your wife is sight impaired, the other aspect that we can tell people might not work out for you, but if you observe the dogs doing this and you immediately go to the spot with a garden hose and simply flush it, it won't affect the grass either. So it has to be pretty quickly, but if the dog is there and you observe it just going and putting a gallon of water on that spot, boom, you've negated the effects. If the dogs are staying inside for long periods of time and not drinking a lot of water, that's concentrating the problem. So the more water they get, the more hydrated they are, and the more frequently they go out, the less impact it's going to have on the lawn. So those are the guaranteed ways to kind of limit the damage. Make the urine less concentrated, flush it away when you see it happen, and spend some time trying to train the dogs to go in and out of the way area. You never know. They might be the kind of dogs who really want to do what you want. They like the reward. They like the praise. They might surprise you. Dogs are great people.
Thank you so much.
All right, good luck, Steve. Take care of the doggies.
Bye-bye.
All right, as promised, it's time for the question of the week. Eating insect-damaged crops. Our question this week comes from Kathy in a suburb of Philadelphia, who writes, "I hate to waste any of my precious produce, and after 20 years have come to terms with the fact that I'm going to have to share some amount with creatures big and small. So, for instance, I tend to eat collards and kale that have been a little nibbled, but not any with little squiggles on the leaves. I tend to eat the odd-looking little raspberries that aren't picture-perfect, but I toss ones that are already half-eaten. Now I'm wondering, what do I really need to avoid? I figure eating a collard green with a hole in it isn't going to hurt me. But do the insects that make the hole perhaps leave something behind I should worry about? One thing is certain, I'll always toss crops that were hit with some bird poop because I'm afraid I won't be able to wash it all off completely. I use some fertilizer, not Scott's, she writes, and free compost from the township. But I don't buy any kind of insecticide, and I'm starting to wonder if I should stop being cheap and I should invest in some safe ones. How do you strike a balance between getting a decent harvest and paying $65 for a tomato? I'm not out to win competitions. I just want some fresh crops at my table. Well, Kath, the main focus of your excellent email, whether or not to eat somewhat damaged crops, is a question that affects virtually everyone who's ever grown any food. But it isn't generally spoken about, and it's high time we did discuss it out loud. Much of the answer comes down to personal choice, of course, and the choices you've made so far seem very sound. Now, here's my 12 cents on the matter. First, it's important to realize that every farmer and gardener on the planet suffers damage in the field, whether they grow chemically or organically. It is often reassuring to go to a university or industry website and read that a successful harvest of one crop or another means that more than 50% of that crop is marketable. It's simply a fact. I've helped really talented farmers at harvest time, and although I winced with every toss, followed their instructions to put only absolute perfect produce into the four market basket. Now, many of the fruits that went into their compost or pig feeding bin certainly would have made it to my table. Especially the ones that didn't have any actual pest damage, things like cukes that weren't perfectly straight, zooks that had a little scar down one side, peppers with a little bit of brown cross-hatching in a small area. Such fruits may be a loss to a market farmer, but they're hands-down success stories for a home gardener. Wash them, chop them, eat them, and enjoy them. Now, when it comes to truly damaged produce, tomatoes and cucumbers are easy. If a slug got a little taste of one corner of a tomato or cuke, a pepper weevil made a little hole in an otherwise fine bell, or there's some kind of mysterious blemish on a fruit, I cut away the damaged areas and take a good honest look at what's left. If the damage was minimal, I use the good parts in a salad or for cooking without worry. If the harvest that week is huge, the damaged fruits get made into tomato sauce and pickles after some prudent surgery. But if what first seemed to be a small amount of discoloration goes deep, or I see that I'm cutting away close to half of a fruit, then it all gets tossed into the compost bucket. Raspberries? I found that those raspberries that don't look right also tend not to taste very good. So those odd-looking little ones generally get tossed by me. But if I find a giant, juicy, perfectly colored one that it looks like a wasp got a little bit of first, I am happy to finish it off. Nibbled greens. Now, when I first started gardening, I ate every leaf, no matter how many other denizens of this planet seemed to have gotten there before me. But as I got better at this game and learned to plant more rows of things we really liked, I've gotten downright persnickety on this topic. If a spinach or lettuce leaf is nibbled or even slightly less green than its brethren, it's fuel for the compost. Now, leaf-eating insects don't leave behind any residues that could harm humans. So if your harvest is small, go ahead and eat the good parts, even if there's a hole or two involved. But those squiggly little lines on a leaf that turn your greens into a bad-looking roadmap are made by leaf miners, and they're inside the produce. So unless you're into eating bugs and their frass, they should get tossed. You're also wise to toss anything that was, quote, decorated by birds. I would do the same for anything that might have been attacked by mice or raccoons. And finally, I hear what you're saying about not wanting to spend more on inputs than the garden is worth. But I think some wise buys might be in order. Especially for you, for instance, if that not Scott's fertilizer is a chemical. Use more of the free compost to get your garden nutrition, and use the money you save to instead buy some floating row covers. They provide perfect protection for crops that don't need pollination, like your kale and collards. The covers will keep bugs and bird poop off, so you'll get perfect greens. And the covers last for many years with a little care, so it's a wise investment with a big return. Well, that sure was an interesting discussion on how to handle damaged produce, now wasn't it? Luckily for you, this and every question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it in detail, just click the link at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Yikes, my producer is threatening to inflict some damage on me if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. Please tell us where you live in the email. Put the actual subject of your email in the subject line of the email. And check first to see if the information you seek is already waiting for you at our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you can click through to the question of the week. Find the solutions to hundreds of garden problems. Oi, hint, hint, just like yours in our Garden Answers A to Z section. And or listen to this show, listen to old shows, and or download this week's podcast. Elizabeth Perez Lunes, executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week has been Al Banks. Our webmasters are Richard the Barbarian Banowitz and Sarah the She-Devil Kazar. Our blemish-free intern is Jessica Mandan. Picture-perfect Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Slightly damaged Al Banks is our editor. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and I better turn my bad side the other way so I can escape the compost pile and see you next week. An invasion of parasitic dodder might make you think a can of silly string exploded. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll explain how to handle this ruthless and rootless weed, plus your fabulous phone calls.
That's next Saturday at 11 o'clock on